This is Talking with the Gravy Train on Ski Tracks, the latest in Nordic ski talk and news. And now your host, Peter Graves.
Hello again, everyone. It's another edition of Talking with the Gravy Train. I'm Peter Graves in studio today, and we're very happy to have with us Noah Hoffman from his home in Aspen, Colorado, with us on the phone. Noah, good morning. Great to have you with us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me, as always.
Yeah, well, we appreciate it. So, Noah, I think the first thing I really have on my mind is something probably a lot of people do. Take me back. First of all, what was the specific nature of the injury?
I broke a piece of my fibula off, and I tore the ligaments between my fibula and tibia. So that was the main part of the damage.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I want to get back to that, but to be sequential here, tell me about that day. I think it was the first World Cup race of the season for you, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. It was the 15K Classic in Kosovo, and of course, the first race of the year always brings a lot of nerves and a lot of expectation and kind of some unknown aspects to it. And we'd done a time trial the week before that I didn't ski very well, and so I was really focused on just how I was executing the race, and I think I actually did a fairly good job of certainly skiing better than I had the week before in the time trial, but the way I skied the race didn't really affect the crash, I don't think. I think the crash was kind of an independent event in my mind.
Mm-hmm. What happened? This was on a downhill, I think, right?
Yeah, it was on a downhill. It's known as being a challenging corner, but nothing too crazy. It's a fast straight downhill that goes into a right hand corner. And it gets icy. The men, we were second, so the women had all skied over it a couple of times in their race. Plus, of course, everyone's warmed up on it. It was icy, and then there was a soft, snowy berm at the end, and I just kind of lost control on the ice and went through the berm, and then there was a fence lining the corner to keep us on the trail, and it was an alpine netting fence, but then they put some sort of a plastic over it to make it solid, which is good because it stops you from catching your tips on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I went into this fence, and my right ski just hit the fence and snapped in half, and my right leg is great. My left ski hit the fence and punctured through the plastic and through the netting, and then I kind of kept sliding, and the ski torqued my leg, and that's how I believe that's how the injury occurred.
Mm-hmm. And you were lying there for some moments and thinking, what did you think pretty immediately that, ooh, I've really done something fairly major here?
Well, my first thought was actually to get out of the way because it was a really bad spot to be laying. So I actually did stand up and glide down the rest of the hill, which wasn't very far at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't put weight on my left leg. So that's when I knew that I certainly couldn't finish the race, which was a bummer, and I was in quite a bit of pain. So I got down to the bottom of the hill a little ways down the trail, and there was a coaching zone not very far away. I was able to shout for help, and actually Brian Fish of the U.S. team was there to come help me, and that was really lucky and essential.
Yeah. And so, Noah, you then, I guess, were flown home. I think I saw some pictures of that on the internet, and you had surgery. What can you tell us about the surgery and the prognosis as you hear it to be?
Yeah, I came straight on to Colorado, and the timeliness of the medical events that happened was really incredible. I crashed on a Sunday, flew home, made it home to Denver at 3 o'clock on Monday. And then on Tuesday, I saw Dr. Hackett, who's the U.S. snowboard team doctor, and he's a knee specialist.
Mm-hmm.
And he took a look at my knee, which was also, I have a sprained MCL. He said, that'll be fine by the time my ankle is fine. And he took a look at my x-rays that we got taken on Sunday in Finland. And he discussed with Dr. Thomas Clanton, who's mm-hmm. his partner, who's a foot and ankle specialist. And they looked at the x-rays together and decided that I needed to get an MRI. So that was Tuesday. Wednesday, I got the MRI. No, sorry. Tuesday afternoon, I got the MRI. And Wednesday, I got in to see Dr. Clanton, who had at that point seen the x-rays, read the MRI. He strongly advised that I get surgery.
Mm-hmm.
Also on Wednesday, Dr. Greg Schumacher, who is a doc who has traveled with us extensively, he'll be at World Championships with us this year, and he is going to take over as our head doc in the next couple of years. And he's up in Anchorage, Alaska. He was able to give a second opinion also on Wednesday. He agreed wholeheartedly with Dr. Clanton that an operation was necessary, and I got in for the operation on Thursday. So it really was amazing how fast all of that happened.
Yeah.
And then the surgery went as well as it possibly could have. Dr. Clanton got in there, and besides the ligaments and the bone, there was no additional damage, which was great. And he repaired the broken bone, repositioned the broken bone with a plate and two screws. And then he reattached the ligaments with sutures, and then he did a stress test on the ankle and felt the ankle was still too loose after reattaching the ligaments.
Mm-hmm.
And so he went in and he put in a synthetic ligament as well to stabilize the ankle. Both the synthetic ligament and the plate and screws could come out at a later date if they are troublesome for me.
Yeah, certainly sounds like they handled it, everybody, as expeditiously as possible, which certainly is, I'm sure, a wise thing.
I feel like I'm in the best hands I could possibly be in. I mean, to be working with Dr. Clanton, who really does lead the field in foot and ankle orthopedic repair in this country, I feel incredibly lucky. And he's been so generous with his time and hands-on in my recovery. I've already seen him twice in the 13 days since surgery. It's really wonderful.
Oh, that's great. So what is the prognosis? Are you able to be doing something now? And when might you be back on skis and racing again?
I can do anything now that doesn't put a load through my ankle. That was the restriction I was given, and mm-hmm. so I'm extremely lucky that Concept 2, the ski, rowing, and erg company out
right.
of Vermont,
mm-hmm.
Was generous enough to send me a rowing machine that I have here, where I'm staying in Colorado, and I'm using that to train, as well as a hand bike, and I'm hoping to work into the pool later this week as well. Dr. Clanton yesterday said that would be a good idea. So I got lots of options for training, you know, soon to come. Also, we'll be spinning on a trainer a little bit when I can put a little bit of a load through that ankle. And so there's lots of ways to stay in shape. And the goal is for Dr. Clanton's goal is to have me back for Östersund, Sweden World Cup in early February, the weekend before the World Championships,
mm-hmm.
And have me ready to go to race there and then ready for the World Championships.
Well, that's wonderful, and I hope it indeed recovers just like that. So, I mean, one of the things, you've made some really solid and quantifiable improvements in the last few years, particularly. What is it... I know you also to be a very upbeat and optimistic kind of guy, much to your credit. What's the emotional side of this? How are you handling that? And, you're very fit going into the season. Then this happens at a first World Cup. It would be very disappointing to me.
It is challenging, but it certainly never came across to me as being the end of, you know, as a feeling of the end of the world, or as a feeling of even the end of my season or career. I was always kind of just taking it one step at a time. I guess I never looked at it from a super, a super negative light. No ski racer wants to be home in December and January. No ski racer, as much as wonderful as it will be to be home for the holidays, no ski racer wants to be sitting at home when the World Cup is going on over in Europe. So that part is challenging, and I love watching my teammates. I'm so excited for them and the results that they've had. You know, Ida has been wonderful, and the rest of the team is on the upward swing, and and I'm looking forward to great things from them. But I feel like, you know, it is challenging to be sitting over here and waking up in the morning and looking at FIS and watching results when that's where I want to be. But I'll be back over there soon. And my career goals are long-term. You know, I want to be in a medal position come 2018. And this doesn't negatively affect that.
Mm-hmm.
This is just a small roadblock on the way to where I really want to be.
Well, I think that's wonderfully framed, and I wish you all of that. So, Noah, on a broader scale and putting the injury aside, we talked about you have certainly made progress in the last few years. What are maybe one, two, or three sort of rather profound lessons that you have learned the last couple of years in international racing that you bring to your racing now?
I think one is a mindset that I have when I'm skiing well, and that is just almost an indifference about the end result. The end result is so minor compared to skiing the way that I know I have to, because the end result falls into place if I ski the way that I can. And that's been a challenge for me in the past, is getting, I will get super hung up on the end result, and what happens in the interim and the things that I need to do to get me there end up not happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's been the biggest single thing that's allowed me to have some breakthrough results in the last couple of years. Other things is some changes we've made in technique and focuses on trying to improve my weaknesses. I've always struggled with really fast skiing. I've always struggled with upper body strength and just double pulling, and that continues to be a weakness for me, but I believe I've made gains in that area. And I've worked really hard on trying to ski more efficiently, learn how to ski more efficiently,
mm-hmm.
and building some strength and power in my upper body. And I think those things have made big differences as well.
Okay, that's good. I know Marty Hall will be angry with me if I don't ask what sort of hours you were at this year, because he's very interested in that, and a lot of people are. Can you share with us about where you're at in yearly hours?
We don't set a yearly goal, and so I don't follow it super closely. We train on a three-day training plan, essentially,
mm-hmm.
and so based on where my energy is and what I can handle, my coach and I put together 3 days worth of training, and then at the end of those 3 days, we reevaluate and put together another 3 days. And so we're not very focused on yearly hours. I did look at one point. I was right around, at the beginning of the race season, I was right around 600 hours since May 1st,
mm-hmm.
Which is maybe only honestly on track for about 800 or 850 for the year, because my load comes way, way down during the winter when I'm racing. Now, of course, this injury will maybe even take that lower, but
mm-hmm.
Although maybe not, because I'll have a little bit of more opportunity to do some training because I don't have to worry about racing for the next couple of months. So
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure where my hours will end up this year, but I was at right close to 600 at the beginning of the race.
Yeah, no, that's good. So as you watch some of the World Cup action for the men unfold on your computer screen, which I'm sure you are glued to, what impresses you about what you've seen this season thus far?
Well, you have to start with the Norwegian team mm-hmm. in general, and their dominance so far this year I would venture to almost say discouraging for the rest of the world at this point. It's incredible what they're doing. And then, like I said, on our team, Ida has been wonderful, and Sadie had some great results in Ruka. So those two athletes on my team have shown what the team as a whole is capable of, and I believe that the rest of the team is going to follow. Alex Harvey, as always, is somebody that I like to watch because he's a friend of mine, and he skis consistently at that top level, and I'm mm-hmm. very impressed with him.
You spoke go ahead. Please go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, watching somebody like Dario is always interesting to me, Dario Colonia, because he tends to build into the season more, and he was not great the first couple of weekends, and he's had some he was on the podium recently, and so I enjoy following him as well. Mm-hmm. Those are my standout people, I think.
I think we, all of us who watch this sport, have great appreciation for Dario because of what he's done. And last year at the Olympics was certainly a great example of somebody like you who bounced back from a pretty significant injury.
It is. I'm definitely using him as a lot of motivation and a lot of kind of confidence that this can be done in terms of skiing at a high level when you come back from an injury, a lower leg injury, which is also what he had. And he's, you know, what he did last year was frankly astounding, and he's very impressive. And if I can come back even close to the level that I was at, and you know, he came back at or above the level that he was skiing at, which was best in the world at the time, and I would love to follow in his footsteps.
Yeah. Well, Noah, I really appreciate it. It's great to talk to you, and certainly all of us joined together in wishing you a very speedy and very successful recovery. And, you know, I any final thoughts?
No, just thank you as always, Peter. And I'm excited to be following everyone throughout the winter and then be back in action at the end of the season.
All right, Noah, thank you very much. Noah Hoffman from the U.S. Ski Team joining us from his home in Colorado. You're listening to Talking with the Gravy Train on Ski Tracks. And for all of us, we wish you a very, very happy holiday.